Welcome back to the final half hour of Green Rush Live, our really live business of cannabis talk show that we have here on Pro Cannabis Media every Friday afternoon from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm Jimmy Young, the founder of Pro Cannabis Media, and I'm here basically just to remind people who are watching to like, share, and subscribe to the content, not just on Green Rush Live, but also our weekly news show. I'm so proud of it. Elena Pinto does a great job as an anchor. She is network quality, people, okay? She came from a network affiliate in Boston, and she's working for us, and we're so happy to have her as part of the team. And Tori Chamberlain, the producer of that show, does a great job, as does Dan French, who stays up all night, Thursday night, putting this show together. And I probably should be giving him kudos for that as well, because he controls this show. He could actually mute me at any time. So think about that power that that gives him, all right? Joining us in the last half hour once again is Doug Miller and Josh Kincaid, but we're joined by Arshad Lassie from the Nirvana Group in Oklahoma. Hello, Arshad, how are you?
I'm great, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us about the Nirvana Group and where you operate out of and what you guys do.
Sure, we're based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it started off as a smoke shop about 10 years ago that my dad started. And when Oklahoma legalized medical marijuana, I urged my family to take part in it and participate. And in the past 3 years, we've seen a lot of success, and we've been able to grow our business into multiple retail stores, cultivation, manufacturing, distribution, and build a suite of cannabis brands.
Fantastic. Congratulations, because those on this show know how much work it takes to accomplish what you guys have done. And Oklahoma has had, you know, an interesting relationship, because pretty much anybody who was in the phone book in Oklahoma was able to get a license, pretty much.
More or less, yeah.
And a lot of them have been sold. A lot of them are not being used. What is the state of the industry in Oklahoma now?
It's definitely extremely competitive. There were a lot of business licenses awarded to a lot of different people. Some people have had immense success, and some people have not been so fortunate, and they've struggled and continue to struggle. But we are, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We see the possibility of adult use and recreational being passed in the next couple of months. And we're excited that that's going to bring in a new wave of business and revitalize the state. But, you know, it's still a great market, and people are still doing phenomenal things and having lots of success.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Josh this because he's a numbers guy. Josh, when you compare the adult use market sales to the medical sales, there's got to be an X factor in there. How much more value, how much more sales on the adult use side versus just the medical? I'm sure you know this. Am I right?
Yeah. If you look at a chart and you were to compare medical and recreational sales, you would see this bar and then you would see nothing next to it. And that would be the comparison. Medical would be zero because it literally doesn't pay for itself. The cost of the card, like unless you're buying a lot, doesn't actually pay for itself. And so every single adult use state that rolls out, medical sales basically go to nothing. And the entire market has no quote unquote demand because it was never designed for a medical market. The rec came in, or adult use came in and wiped that out.
Yeah. And in New Jersey, Doug, this is going on right now. You're finally opening up adult use stores. I don't know if you have any stats about what is going on in New Jersey or not, but just your overall impression of what you see going on.
Well, it is funny because with the adult use, because our lines are long and medicinal patients do have to get first, like prior. So if you have a medicinal card, you can skip the line and walk right into the dispensary and go right ahead of everybody. So there are people that do still have their medicinal card and use it. I have a medicinal card. I work with the doctor, so I do help them. So, but yeah, it's funny because a lot of people, I mean, I know a ton of people that signed up for the medicinal card when it was just medicinal. They're not renewing their cards now.
Quick stat I can tell you in Massachusetts, just so you know, the governor was one of the few governors in this state to actually shut down the adult use market in Massachusetts when the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the pandemic It's not over. It's just we're dealing with it better now. That being said, I'm pretty sure that there was a spike in medical card use during the pandemic. I think 170,000 patients, and now it's down to about 92,000 in Massachusetts. And yet anybody who uses this product is really using it medicinally. Arshad, when you're looking at your books and you're projecting the difference between where you guys are with the medical program versus where you think you can go with adult use, what's the X factor in that?
Well, we think it's definitely going to, like, Oklahoma last year did almost $1 billion in medical sales. Yeah. So we think that within the next 2 to 3 years, we should see at least similar numbers in adult use sales. But, you know, we recently got our license in New Mexico. And one thing that's been interesting there is New Mexico's first adult use sales started in April. And every month, the state releases the report, and adult use and medical are neck and neck. It's like 51-49 adult use. And I think there's a couple of factors there. I think some states have very few pre-existing condition requirements. The cost of acquiring a medical card is so cheap that it could offset, if you're an avid consumer or a regular consumer, it's part of your lifestyle, then it could offset the tax differences and you know, offers you different milligrams and doses of products. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that entirely fares out here. But we do expect it to massively increase, you know, revenue and sales.
How big is, you said you're vertically integrated. How big is your grow?
We do a greenhouse cultivation. We have about 10,000 square feet of greenhouse space.
And any idea what the, how many pounds you're able to get through that little greenhouse?
Probably close to 3,000 to 5,000 pounds a month. A year.
I was going to say a month. Wait a second. That's
pumping some serious gas into that thing if they're blooming that fast.
Throughout the course of a year. And Oklahoma has such a massive availability of biomass that I'm sure we could push it and do more, but it's not been needed because we can acquire so much at, you know, at a very similar cost.
And give me a little help with the Oklahoma market as far as population of that state. How big a state is Oklahoma?
About 4 million people who live in the entire state. Right. It's pretty small. It's pretty small. Yeah.
Right. For state. I get that. It's always interesting to me because now the numbers guys are looking at canopy space. They're looking at yield. They're able to look at real figures as opposed to projections that were around before the market has happened here in Massachusetts. So I think it's well over my head when it comes to numbers. Josh, you got. I know you'll have a question for Arshad. Go ahead.
Well, let's start with the number of 7,500 licenses in Oklahoma is a tremendous amount. It makes Portland look like they have a moratorium or something. Yeah. And Oregon has with half that, about 3,500 licenses, and they're probably the second most in the nation. So at some point, it sounds like you're going to have a pretty good opportunity for your picking as some of those businesses kind of collapse. But I'm wondering what type of market Oklahoma is. Is it conservative like in Arizona where they're buying vapes a lot, or is it more of an open market like Washington where they're buying a bunch of pre-rolls? Maybe describe to the audience and let us know, what do people go after? What's some of the favorite products that you're seeing that you're shipping and making a lot of?
Well, I think one other number that's really important to note is out of the 4 million people that live here, almost 400,000 have a medical card. Damn. So I think 1 in 11 people or 1 in 10 people has access to medical cannabis, right? So it's a very open market. Consumers are, open to trying a lot of new things. And we've seen tremendous amounts of innovation in the past 3 years, things that we don't see in other markets for maybe 5 to 7 years. But, 50% of most sales are still flower, but edibles and pre-rolls and extracts and beverages are definitely a growing space and make up a large aspect of our volume.
Has anybody enjoyed the beverages, Doug and Josh? Just an open question. Every time I've tried them, they're about 5 milligrams. That's the limit of a can in Massachusetts. It does nothing.
We sell 100 milligram juice.
Well, that'll help.
It's a single serving, 8 ounces, 100 milligram. We're actually going to have a 250 milligram. So I think that's really what the market is looking for, is a proper high-dosed beverage where you don't have to have 6 or 8 cans to feel like you're, you know, getting where you want to go.
Yeah. I will say, though, at MJ BizCon, people would go after some of the those low-dose beverages if the price was right. So if for $3 to $5 at a store, or you know, $5 to $10 at a bar, people will consume 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 of those if they're at MJ BizCon all night, 4 hours or whatever. They will consume at least 4 of those, like water, throughout the night. But you know, when I was in Chicago, 5 milligrams, I'm not going to touch one of those beverages. But in Washington, 100 milligrams. Maybe once a year. I can't even remember the last time I bought a beverage. I'm still waiting for infused coffee to become a thing. But, you know, Ray's Lemonade, really popular here locally. But no, nobody really drinks beverages, or at least not a lot.
And it's interesting because one of the quotes I always use, Jason Raposa, who has a company called Good Feels, it's one of the top beverage companies in Massachusetts, has a friend who's an oncologist. You got visited by, I'm guessing it's a dog.
I'll mute. Sorry.
No. I don't care. Say hello to the dog. I don't know. It's an open talk show. He said the oncologist is really adamant about increasing the amount of percentage of THC in the beverages for their cancer patients, because that's where this is truly where the application for medicinal benefits should be focused on. Arshad, what's your opinion about how much this kind of thing? I mean, you said you have a 100 milligram bottle. That's not an individual dose, though. That's multiple doses, or not?
I think it's dependent on the consumer.
The person, yeah.
I think there's tons of people out there who, you know, maybe that's not even enough. They need a little bit more because they've developed a tolerance or whatever their reason may be. But I see a lot of folks in Oklahoma consume that as a single serving, or maybe 2 servings, but at most 4, but not like 10 milligram servings, right? They're drinking half that bottle or the whole bottle or something of that nature.
We saw people on Fridays between the hours of 3 and 5 on a Friday consume 30% of all edibles, and majority of those were beverages. So people were wanting to get, you know, really, really high on a Friday night and needing 2 days to recover.
Wow. By the way, I don't call that a hangover. I call it a leftover, because you wake up and you're still high.
I like that.
How is the edibles in Oklahoma? Do you have access to everything? Because in New Jersey, we only have lozenges, and dispensaries are making other things to get around it, and no one's saying anything. But we're not allowed to have any of the beverages. And I was just wondering, because you're just medicinal out there. We actually have rec, adult use, and medicinal, and we still can't have edibles. So I was just wondering if it's full out gummy bears and everything.
Oh, everything. Gummy bears, gummy worms, you know, the ropes with the little nerd candies on them. And the milligrams are crazy, too. We've got up to 4,000, 5,000 milligrams in a chocolate bar.
What?
Yeah. 2,000 milligram bags of gummies. Each gummy, each little single chew, the circle is 200 milligrams of THC.
That's holy mackerel.
You know, our friends at Cosmic, they have this really cool thing. It's a peanut butter jelly gummy. So it's a grape flavored gummy with a little bit of peanut butter in it. And they basically squeeze the two gummies together, and that's their cooking process. So when you eat it and you bite into it, you get a little, you know, peanut butter surprise. And that gummy has over 100 milligrams of THC in it.
Wow. Don't judge me, Jimmy, if I want to go and buy a tequila in a plastic bottle, okay? Like if I want to buy a 1,000 milligram bar, that should be my prerogative. And I've got a video on the Talking Heads YouTube of a guy doing that in 2015, eating a 1,000 milligram bar and just slowly melting into his seat as time went on.
And I'm not judging. I'm flabbergasted, and I'm amazed and intrigued. I mean, it is what it is. This is where, and again, I love having people like Arshad on, because we get the feel for what it's like in that state. We've heard stories. I mean, I know we all heard stories about Oklahoma, but this is enlightening in many ways. Doug, by the way, Doug has a edible product I'm sure he'd like to share with you at some point.
Sure, absolutely.
Arshad, where do you think the federal reform movement is? What is your opinion about what's going on in Washington, D.C. with safe banking and the active lobbies that are now in the nation's capital looking to make reform at the federal level? Is there hope for that, in your opinion?
We're hopeful that there's hope for that, to say the least. You know, it's definitely it's great for the industry as a whole. We get to move forward. We get to be more legitimized and, you know, really take cannabis. And I've spoken about this before, but take it from this very novelty, unique product that's still being accepted and is becoming part of our lifestyle, culture, and society. And really looking at it as what it's going to become eventually, which is more or less a commodity. And I think that the federal government taking these positions and, you know, slowly shifting towards that is just the fruition of cannabis becoming a commodity over the next maybe 5, 10, 15 years. Whether that's positive or negative, it has its pros and cons. But I think that overall, it's good for the industry and it's going to just make it more accessible. And hopefully, along with the access, you also are able to raise the standard and have higher quality products that are really geared for the consumers consuming them.
Right.
And this is what to add on to a commodity, I honestly think hemp will be added to the trading and the NASDAQ as a commodity in the next decade or so. I mean, it's used for too many things, clothing, paper, textile. It's just so useful. And I really do think it will be one of them, a commodity that's traded.
What are the factors that need to happen before it gets there, Doug?
Well, it has to become federally legal.
I know that.
And I think once it becomes
start.
It'll be a good start. But no, it's already has enough usage. And I think there's enough of it. I think it would be pushed to get onto a NASDAQ, to be a trading commodity. Just because there's so much of it. I mean, it's just grown everywhere. So
right. And in Europe, too. I mean, you know, I had a great interview with our European correspondent, Lex Pelger, earlier this week that, again, you've got Ireland now introducing decriminalization in their legislation and their parliament. I just don't know how long, you know. I think everybody said, well, it's going to be legalized. I said, it's not going to be legal for 10 years at the minimum, okay? And I believe. That being said, the descheduling and decriminalization of it and the opening of the banks still is so, so important.
Be careful what you ask for, Jimmy. Be careful what you ask for, because when you get that, a lot of these companies will fail. So I wanted to ask Arshad what his plan was in order to be able to pivot to stay relevant when that happens. When you have price compression, when you have regulatory burdens, when you have fierce competition with 7,500 licenses, how are you going to be the last man standing?
So, I mean, I think the biggest importance here is, one, there's the infrastructure aspect. You know, can you compete, you know, logistically and from a manufacturing and production standpoint to be able to match the prices and have the infrastructure to manage the sales and the distribution? And the other part of it is, do you have a valuable brand? Do you have a unique product? Do you have some sort of connection with the consumers, the legacy consumers and the new wave consumers that have, these are going to people that are going to shape cannabis as a consumer product for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And what they want is what these big companies are going to respond to by creating products. If you have something that they love, that they like, that they relate to, then you have either the option to become a part of, you know, the Unilever or the Pepsi Cola of cannabis, or you sell and you walk away. You make, you know, you make a great chunk of change and you realize you had a good run and, you know, if you're not a billion-dollar company, you're not a billion-dollar company.
Right, right. Again, guys, this is why I love these kind of interviews when we talk to different people at different parts of the country and also the world now. You know, one of our favorite themes is the international theme, and we get people from other countries. I remember we had a Colombian grower on. I mean, I told him, I said, I probably sampled quite a few tons of your product in my teens and my 20s. Okay. Just saying that. Doug, I'm going to go back to you just for a second here and go back to the commodities question. do we have to like set a wholesale price on something and then bring it to the market? Enlighten me, please.
Everything's based off of speculation. So whatever they speculate the price will be at that time.
If they don't know, look, we've got legends. We've got people that we've elected that are clueless about this product. Now we're going to have somebody else setting the price on it.
And that's how it works. And everything's based off of speculation, and they have market makers, and they make the prices, and that's just how it works. And their people control the market at the end of the day. Someone has to run it. So they'll make a price. They'll stick with it. That's where it'll start on a chart, and it'll just trade from there. And that'll
Arshad, be that. What's the one thing in Oklahoma you'd like to see change in the industry?
That's an interesting question. I think that we definitely, it's the analogy that my dad gives me is if you've got a school and you've got a school teacher, you've got one teacher and you can have 30 students or you can have 300 students. And that one teacher can only manage and take care of so many students at a time. So I think what happened here is we had at one time almost 11,000 business licenses, and it becomes very tough for any regulatory agency, especially a new one, to be able to truly enforce it and regulate it and do the things it needs to. And we've seen that shift now. I think the state has realized maybe we overextended and we need to have some changes. So we've got a moratorium and some other things in place, a larger budget, and these protocols that I think is going to help mitigate that. Really, what we want to see is the continuation of that, and just get more regulatory standards in Oklahoma.
Gotcha. You had mentioned you started with convenience stores and then converted those into the cannabis shops. Have you noticed an increase or uptick in robberies when you compare the two businesses that you've had? I'm wondering if cannabis was had the option of using plastic, if that would decrease the robberies we're seeing on the West Coast. So multiple part question, have you seen the difference in robberies, and do you think being cashless would help?
I think being cashless would help a little bit, but I mean, my family's been in the C-store, convenience store, gas station business for a long time, and we have probably been robbed dozens of times. I mean, we've, knock on wood, we've only had two instances where one of our stores was broken into on the cannabis side. But in the gas station business, it was every couple of months there was an incident. I remember I was like 4 years old, and my dad had this gas station in Dallas, Texas, and a group of people came in, and there was a gun to my head. So I've never experienced anything like that in cannabis, but in the gas station business, it's very normal. So
do you think, cause I've been robbed at 420 at a bank when I was a bank manager, I had a gun to my head too. So I know what it feels like. And so I'm skeptical that the cashless is really going to change for that very reason right there. So I don't think it's about the cash. I think you're going to get robberies no matter what.
I think it's also like the perception is like people think dispensaries are making tons of money. They're just floating in cash. And there's just loose product everywhere. I mean, these are organized businesses. We have cash pickup every day. We've got a vault. We've got a safe. All the product is locked up. There's procedures in place. There's magnetic doors and locks and stuff. It's not easy, but I think it's just that perception of like grab and go. And most of the robberies we see is guys come in, they break the showcase, grab as much as they can, and then they run out the door. We don't see these elaborate overnight robberies or, you know, people coming in armed, telling you to empty the register or open the vault or anything like that. We've seen mostly just these grab and go type things.
Hey, Doug, have you ever had a gun to your head?
Actually, thank goodness, no. I've seen some crazy stuff, but thank God I never had a gun to my head. You guys are quite
brave.
That's a life experience. That'll change your life.
I think I'm going to pass on too, guys, but I appreciate your honesty, openness, and transparency on that. Hey, Arshad, if I ever come to either Texas, which I have. I have a friend in Austin area, okay? If I ever do go to Oklahoma, I'd be fascinated to get a little tour and everything, and I'll definitely keep in touch with you. I don't have any plans, by the way, to go to Oklahoma. I did one of the highlights of my broadcast career was a statewide baseball game at Rosenblatt Stadium in Omaha, and that was not Oklahoma, though. You know what I'm saying, right? Okay. Right, guys, right? Omaha's in Nebraska, isn't it? Which is right next to Oklahoma, right? I mean, I know my map. Up above it, right?
That doesn't sound like you do.
No? Not going to worry about it. Hey, Doug and Josh, thank you guys for hanging out with us on a Friday afternoon. Arshad, great to – if people want to find out about the Nirvana Group, I'm guessing Google it, LinkedIn, all that neat stuff.
All that stuff, yeah, definitely.
All right, man. Hey, thank you again. Appreciate it. Well, thank that's going to wrap up our Green Rush Live, our really live business of cannabis talk show that we do every Friday afternoon here on Pro Cannabis Media. Remember, a reminder, Weed Talk News is coming up after this particular show. And to like, share, and subscribe to all the programs at Pro Cannabis Media, including In the Weeds with Jimmy Young. Will you please? We will see you next week when we do Women in Cannabis, one of my favorite subjects. So remember, it's a whole new world of weed. Use it responsibly. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
With that, we're going to roll this one up. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out and check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey there, this is Cheryl Murray Powell Esquire, and I'm the host of the Terps in the City podcast. I'm a cannabis agricultural dietary supplement and trade attorney. I'm also a hemp farmer, and I've been recently named to the list of High Times Magazine's top 100 influencers in cannabis. I'm inviting you to follow me along my journey as I move back to New York to support the adult use market there. You're going to get a chance to listen to conversations with some of my friends along the way. I look forward to seeing you at Terps in the City.